other yak babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Welcome to Yak Babies, the only podcast on the internet sponsored by Sassy Skeleton's Party Patrol. Let's Party Patrol. I'm sitting here with my personal pals, Brick. Dave. And the colleague from Old Ireland, we have, of course, Old Irish Nico.
My favorite are the ones where you're like halfway through, you're like, I don't like this anymore.
I thought it was funny a long time ago, and now it's no longer funny.
It's a real journey to go through. What? About
what, did I think that was good? Yeah, absolutely. A couple months ago, or I don't know, it could be 1,000 years ago, whenever it was in time, whatever that means anymore. Back during, around the time of the insurrection at the Capitol, when Josh Hawley had his book deal canceled from Simon & Schuster, was it Random House? I can't remember which publisher it was. He responded that it was an Orwellian tactic to have his book contract canceled. And another intellectual titan of our era, Don Jr., had also said something about, like, we're living in 1984. And the Yak Babies over here saw that or read that and thought, we should do something about this. And our response was to get the fucking cannon out. Cue cannon music. Do we have a cannon theme, right?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
It was a Yakky nominee.
That's right. Yeah.
Keep it in school or blast that book into the ocean. Cannon or cannon?
Folks, it's 1984 by George Orwell, and we're playing Cannon or Cannon. It's our third installment of our blockbuster series. It's getting rave reviews. People love it. Where we take a classic entry into the Western canon of literature and reread it and decide, or read it for the first time in some cases, and decide whether it belongs in the canon or should be shot out of a cannon into the sea, into the arms of an angry Poseidon who will devour it and then shit it back out.
Fish poop.
A blast of fish. Fish food, yes. Immortalized in a recent Snack Babies episode. I read this book in middle school for the first and only time. Well, before this time, I suppose.
On your own or for class?
It was for class, yeah.
Really? In middle school? Shit.
Yes, that's part of going to inform my commentary on this discussion, I think.
Yeah.
We read it back to back with Fahrenheit 451, which is an interesting combo. What is your all experience with 1984? Brick, when did you first read it?
I read it in high school, and then I read it maybe 5 years ago because I tried teaching it in a class, but I didn't really get off the ground with it. Mm. And then I read it a few weeks ago.
Dave, what about you?
I had never read it. Okay. In fact, when we did our modern library thing a year or two ago, that was the book you guys assigned me to read.
Oh, right. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and then I didn't. So this is my first time. I read some Orwell before, but neither Animal Farm nor 1984. It never came up in school, and I never tried it on my own.
What had you read besides of Orwell?
Some essays. I had a little like pocketbook of essays where he writes about being a book reviewer and working in a bookstore and why books are worth spending money on. Like, he compares them to cigarettes, and it's good stuff.
Gotcha. Nico, what about you?
I'm pretty sure I read it in grade school. At some point, I have a vague memory of thinking that the sexy parts were sexy. So I must have been pretty young, because it turns out they're not that sexy.
You love fucking in a weird room while being surveilled. Maybe you do, actually. It's not that surprising.
Yeah.
Tastes like I do, for sure. I should actually amend my statement. The first time I read 1984 was in summary form in the Great American Bathroom book that I had, that we discussed, and I read 1984 first there. So when I later read it in middle school, I was like, well, I know the story, so I'm just getting more. I read Lord of the Flies, same way first, is that like Great American Bathroom book summary. So published in 1949, 1984 is, I feel like, the classic dystopian novel. It's maybe the first thing most people think of dystopias as a genre. And it's lauded. I mean, this was Dave said we did the discussion of the Modern Library's 100 Best Novels of the 20th Century list. This came in at number 13 on the critics list and 6 on the readers list. It shows up consistently on sort of lists of best novels of all time. And it's also just this like deathless reference, right? Like, it comes up Orwellian, Big Brother, doublethink, newspeak, thought crime, memory hole, all words that are like in the common parlance and have never left it. Like, we use them all the time. Maybe sort of part of our discussion too. Thoughts? How was your engagement with the team for this time? How'd it go?
It was okay.
Nikos swaying.
Let's hear from Dave first, since he never read it.
Yeah, Dave.
I mean, I really liked it. You know, there's a lot of it, obviously, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, that sort of speaks to today. But even without that, I mean, it's really well done, but boy, what a grim.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that. I mean, for some reason, I mean, I knew what the last line was, the famous last line. In fact, I think it's appeared in a game or two, as has the first line. So I knew that the ending wasn't necessarily happy, but I didn't expect to feel the way I felt when I got there.
That surprised me too. Like, I don't think I was quite able to process it at like, what, 11 or 12 when I read it in middle school.
Yeah.
I understood the, like, the broad interpretation is like, don't censor things, that's bad, right? And like, I think every kid understands that part of it, or like, that's pretty easy to grasp onto. But like, the anti-life feeling of the end of that book, I don't think really hit in any significant way. And this time it really did. Like, I was massively bummed out when I finished reading this in a very significant and serious way. Brick, what about you?
I still really like it. Yeah.
Yeah.
The last time I read it a few years ago, I don't think I finished it. So the ending felt a little fresher to me. I mean, I knew it, but I definitely felt the same way, where like, as an adult, it hits a little different. I think it's a very difficult book to read following the last 4 years and not in a happy way.
Well, it's part of the conversation, I think, and Dave mentioned that too, is like this, like the resonances you have with the current state of things. And I wondered about that. Like, I, reading it, to me, I kept noticing things that, yeah, did seem relevant. Like, there was one point where he's talking about how the Ministry of Truth makes these like insipid songs that people sing, and they're like made by machines. Like, no one actually writes them. They're just like churned out by like programs. And I was like, oh yeah, there was that recent story, or several recent stories, about Spotify making fake artists and fake songs. And like, they're all computer generated, and they're just, or not all of them, but some of them are computer generated. They're just like artists who are not real. They use stock pictures for their like artist bios, and they put them on these playlists, and people are like massive fans of these like robots who like have never actually written anything. And I was like, holy shit, that's very resonant. That's like immediately happening right now. But I also wonder, it felt like you could look at 1984 and find examples or comparisons to suit whatever your political persuasion is. You can find some example to prove your point, right? Which I think is part of the problem with how 1984 is maybe treated these days. Did you feel the same way?
Yeah, I think most of the people that talk about it probably haven't read it.
Well, yeah, for sure.
I think it's pretty likely Josh Hawley hasn't read it. I know Don Jr. hasn't read it. And I think it becomes even more worrisome when, like, the people who talk about it the most are also the ones, them talking about it is almost actively participating in the kind of doublespeak stuff he's talking about. I do think, as on the nose as this feels the last few years, most of this book made me feel much more sort of sad or not great, and just kind of bad about, like, the early 2000s. I found a lot more resonance around endless war and 9/11 and the Middle East, and the Ministry of Love, or wherever he goes, is basically Guantanamo.
Yeah. Yeah. And all those things are based on, like, I was reading up on it afterwards, that a lot of the stuff is based on actual like Soviet tactics, right? So it's like those things happened in the past when Orwell was writing in 1949 or 48 when he was writing it, and would happen in the future. Still, like, I kept noting, I was like, yeah, he's totally right. Like, Emmanuel Goldstein's not book that he reads in the last like third of the novel. And I was like, this could have been written today. Like, he was right. He was just right about the whole thing. It's really, I mean, some ways, not entirely, but like
close enough.
Everything seemed to hit. Nico, you were kind of shaking your head, sort of so-so. Tell us about your reaction here.
I might play the devil's advocate, because I think like the ideas and stuff are interesting and like how kind of relevant they are, but I don't think it's a good book. Like, I don't, it's kind of a cliche, but I don't like any of the characters, especially not Winston. I think Winston is like terrible. And I mean, maybe that's part of the point, because like, he's just consistently weak, and like, he's, you know, spineless, and he's kind of like, doesn't seem to like have any, like, he has like minor qualms about, you know, his horrific job, like deleting the history of the party, but he doesn't really, like, he's just kind of goes along with this girl who, for absolutely no reason, decides that she wants to fuck him.
Yeah.
Then they have like a super weird relationship, and then like the last third of the book is just him literally reading from another book, which is just like world building and philosophy and stuff. So, I mean, as much as it is like, you know, kind of a cornerstone of, I don't know, science fiction or dystopian fiction, it's not a great story, I don't feel like.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I was thinking the same thing in terms of the, it does certainly feel like someone writing a novel in service of a point of view, right? Yeah. So like kind of building a story around it almost, I didn't do enough research on the sort of like the process or composing this novel. I wonder if it started with the Goldstein book, right? If he like started writing that and was like, oh, there's like maybe it's like story here too, and kind of like built from there. It feels like it kind of, because that Goldstein section.
Have you guys read We? Do you guys ever read We?
No, but I saw several references to it in my research. So I want to read it.
So here, let me just read you the premise of We. So We was a story by a Soviet writer and written in 1920, Yevgeny Zamyatin, and it's basically 1984 and 1920, except it has a like slightly more optimistic ending. So instead of the what do they call it, Oceania, it's the one state, and there's a secret police called the Bureau of Guardians, and then there's a guy named D503 who is approached by a woman named 090. It's difficult to keep the different the different names apart. But a woman named I-330, and she smokes cigarettes, drinks alcohol, and shamelessly flirts with him instead of applying for an impersonal sex visit. And so then they start a relationship. She wants him to impregnate her, and they want to overthrow the government. And then eventually there's some other stuff that's not the same. It's like there's humans that have grown fur that are like the original humans that are a bit weird. And then at the end, they succeed. That's kind of the big difference is that. So I-330's mantra is that just as there's no highest number, there's no final revolution. So even though there was a revolution that installed all this shit, like it's not, none of it's permanent. Whereas the Big Brother, I guess, is kind of a response to that. And it's like, well, but if they did like really set out to be the final revolution, this is how they would do it.
Yeah, it feels like maybe Orwell read We and then sort of thought about how that apply to post-World War II political landscape, right?
Do we have a record of him being influenced by this story?
I think I saw it, it's something I read.
If he didn't read it, it's like a staggering coincidence that each of these elements are so similar.
I can't remember where I read it now, but I did read something that said that he had read it and admired it. But there's like enough differences too where it's not, I wouldn't call it plagiarism. But yeah, no, you're right. I think that's worth sort of discussing is like, how does this work on a book level? Like, I think the ideas and the philosophy of it is all not necessarily separate, but like it's definitely sort of a different kind of conversation than just like, did you enjoy the reading of this in terms of plot? I see what you're saying, but also like some of the plot stuff was really good to me. Like the beat where when they're discovered in the love nest above the Charrington shop, genuinely scary surprising when that iron voice comes out from behind the picture.
Yeah.
Scared the shit out of me reading it last night.
Sucks. Yeah.
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 Even though I knew the O'Brien twist was coming in both times I read the actual novel, it is a pretty good like reveal of a betrayal. So there is some like kind of pulpy plot stuff that happens here, but you're right that it does have a, it seems like in service of the ideas more than the
character. I like Winston's character. I think he's supposed to be that way. I think it plays pretty heavy into the thematics, especially as the book ends. But I think Nico's right on Julia, where like she doesn't have really a reason to exist outside Winston's plot.
Mm. Orwell has some problems with women.
Yeah, he sure does.
Sure
does. Yeah, so
upsetting ways.
Definitely agree on that half.
Yeah, how much of Winston's like incel stuff do you think is just Orwell? I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, that reads like you could have pulled it off like Reddit today. Like from like some incel thing, like where he's like, these women are wearing these skirts and they're like, make me so angry because I'm not allowed to have sex with them. And like, it's like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. But I mean, also it's written in 1949.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's definitely not as an excuse, but definitely sort of is.
It explains it.
Yeah. Explains it. Or in some ways, there's another thing part where he's talking about, he says to Julia, you're revolutionary from the waist down. Mm. And then the next line is like, she thought that was really fun. funny. Yeah. I was like, I don't know about that, man. I don't know if she would have liked that so much. It's a fucking mean thing to say to somebody.
Yeah. Did you guys find the part where Aaron made an appearance in the book?
Is it Parsons?
I don't know.
The big fat idiot?
No.
Did it involve going into the bathroom stall?
Oh yeah, it was Parsons. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He made a few more jerky movements up and down several times, causing a longing glance at the lavatory pan. Then he suddenly ripped down his shorts. "Excuse me, old man," he said. "I can't help it. It's the waiting." He plumped his large posteriors onto the lavatory pan. Winston covered his face with his hands.
Yeah.
Just 1949 barn dooring right there.
There was also an appearance of one of our sponsors, one of our old sponsors in the novel. It was in Goldstein.
Don Cheadle.
There's some part where he's talking about how in Goldstein's novel that part of the way that you could put resources to work or sort of like use sort of power and wealth is to have people do like pointless tasks like build pyramids or dig holes in the ground. And I was like, oh, big holes in the ground.
Slavery stuff, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, yeah. It was like literally mentions digging big holes in the ground. I was like, oh yeah, our sponsor. There we go.
That's our top sponsor right now.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, they were famous.
Yaki winner.
Yeah, exactly. I had a question about for you all about the character of Winston and the decision to make Winston from the get-go like skeptical of Big Brother, right? I feel like I was trying to imagine this written today or kind of like a more standard like plot structure, and I feel like the character would have begun as like a happy drone and then sort of gradually had an awakening, right? Kind of like the Lego movie plot, right? You know, begins like everything's fine, everything is awesome, like a movie song, and then has the awakening that the system is bad and the rebels against it, and then is, you know, whatever, fails. Whereas having it begin with Winston as like already skeptical and already kind of knowing the sort of situation makes for a much more, at least my thought, interesting plot.
Yeah, the book would be much worse if he was complicit in the beginning. Well, complicit is not the right word, participatory or whatever. I think a big part of the book is how these systems come into place because people don't do anything about it because they don't feel like they're significant enough to do anything about it, right? Where he knows it sucks. He knows he can't trust it, but he can't act that way. And I think the implication is that's true of probably most people, even the ones that are kind of walking around being bootlickers probably think those things. They're just so kind of conditioned.
Right.
And, you know, if this started with the Hunger Games, Imperial City or whatever it was called, like it wouldn't be the same. You know, even the people in the party don't seem like they're super on board, you know?
Yeah, right. That kind of skepticism and that what makes Winston's character infuriating is that he knows enough to know that this sucks, but can't do anything. He's like so ineffectual and so weak that you're just like frustrated by watching him sort of like do nothing. When he goes and interviews the old man about like the past times and like just like ditches him after buying him some beers, he's like, this guy sucks.
It'd be a little different book probably if he weren't in some way tethered to, I mean, he has memories of a time from when this was oncoming. Whereas like Julia, for example, probably doesn't. It would be a different book if that's just the environment that he were born into.
Right. Anyway, it's funny to think of that as like, this book feels radical because it doesn't start with the character being totally bought into society. Like because it begins with the character a bit ahead of the game already, it feels so new, whereas actually it's not. It's just that most storytelling has like ossified in that regard. Speaking of memories, the memory of his mom and the chocolate bar is fucking horrifying. Like one of the saddest parts of the book for me, for sure, and most affecting. Let's see, also have in terms of notes here, the church song was a motif that this novel, the remembering the
nursery rhyme
poem or sort of like the Yeah. What did you all make of that in terms of significance? What did you, I don't know. I wasn't quite sure what to do with it.
I really liked O'Brien's response when he's like, do you remember this? And he's like, yes, Winston, I know the nursery rhyme you're talking about. Here's the end. And he's like so dismissive. And he's like, what the fuck? Like, this is what you've been thinking about? And then just moves on. So I liked it for that part.
Yeah, me too. It was just an interesting, I guess, like the idea of like tied to the past and memory, right? And like the ability to remember things is valuable.
Were you guys surprised at all that there actually was a war? I just assumed.
Well, I don't know.
I'm not sure there is. Yeah.
So I was assuming that everything was a lie and that there was always. But then it's like, I think there is, because like there's the whole thing about how like part of, like a foundational part of their philosophy is like wasting excess production because human beings need to work a certain amount or they'll go crazy or whatever the nightmare philosophy is.
But they can still do it without a war.
That's the big holes in the ground part.
But then also like moving it back and forth between East Asia and in Eurasia. It's like,
yeah, I mean, they also talk about building the aircraft carriers and then disassembling them, mm-hmm. and then building them again and then disassembling them.
Yeah,
yeah.
If they had a war, they would just roll them out there, right? I don't know. I got the feeling that like maybe this is the whole world, or maybe the rest of the world is fine and it's just a handmade tale kind of thing. And I think it's purposely. You don't know. There could be a war.
I mean, all of the answers suck, right?
It's, yeah, there's no.
Yeah.
I think is the point.
I think one of the more interesting parts about the book for me was like how it's kind of a middle step in this kind of dystopian fiction, I don't know, evolution over the decades. Like, so it's where you start from, like it's a very totalitarian society where it's like the nightmare scenario is basically the Soviet Union or, you know, Stalinism, where like there's police that are going to come after you. They're going to vanish you in the middle of the night. They're going to make you tell everything about your family members, and they're going to vanish them, and on and on and on. And nowadays it seems like the nightmare scenario is more like capitalism gone crazy. And it's like, instead of forcing you to do all this shit, they like kind of tempt you into doing it. And they're like, well, but if you do this, then you get like more chocolate with your fucking shit. And then people just do it instead of, you know, being terrified. They're like almost cowed or lulled into contentment.
Yeah. So apparently Aldous Huxley wrote a letter to Orwell after this was published. So Brave New World came out about 10 years before 1984. Brave New World's premise is almost the same thing, but instead of violence, it's pleasure. And the idea is that you are like lured into subservience or obedience to the party or the whatever the power entity is by pleasure and comfort. And he was like, wrote a letter, was like, basically like, good book, bro, but you're wrong. Like, I'm right. It's going to be, the future is not violence. It's love, but like synthetic love.
Turns out it's both.
It's both. Yeah. It's totally both. The violence definitely is happening. I mean, we see it on the streets. We saw it this week, right? Not officially an institutional policy, but certainly one that was built on and premised on the words of the fucking president. But also like, yeah, like, I mean, this sounds like a fucking high school or like college freshman, like watch more TV and stay home, mm-hmm. and just like don't want anything besides what we give you. That's the Huxley version, is like, you can, if you can jack off to internet porn and then like take an edible and go to bed, like you're not going to go in the streets and try and change something. But the violence is still happening. Like, there is still institutional violence. So it's like, you just get double fucked by these like horrible future visions,
mm-hmm.
which is, I think that's a good transition to talking about the use of the word Orwellian, which was kind of the inspiration for this whole thing, and how, you know, obviously Holly and Don Jr. are not good faith actors, so their words don't make any sense, don't matter anyway in that regard, but other people do use Orwellian in the same sort of a sense or same manner, and it's all always so wrong. And it was helpful to read 1984.
Yeah, it's just never right.
Yeah, and it was helpful to read again and be like, oh yeah, for sure, now I know better why. Like, I couldn't exactly remember from my 8th grade reading like how I could put that sort of crystal together, but now it makes a lot more sense. The whole point of the novel is about the abuse of language, and that's all that the Hollies and Don Jr.'s of the world do, is abuse language.
Yeah, and when they say Orwellian, and just honestly, even like the New York Times and whatever else, they're just talking about censorship. That's they just use it as a stand-in for the word censorship, which itself is not being, we talked about this on the Dr.
Yeah, Shuster, right.
Is not being used. That's not, what's being called censorship is not censorship, right? Because if you're some weeb nerd that didn't get enough anime titties in your video game, that's not censorship, right? If your book deal is not honored because you raped somebody, that's not censorship. That's not what that is. But it's convenient to say those things. I think what it really, like, the most salient and sort of important piece of this book is what you're saying. It's doublespeak and how that has sort of permeated everything and proven to be maybe one of the most dangerous things. Like, there's always been political rhetoric for as long as humans have been around. But with the rise of the internet, it's become potent. And it is possible to say two things at once and somehow have them both be right and wrong at the same time and kind of reap all the rewards and conveniently skirt the negative ones. Like, how is it, like, fuck Andrew Cuomo if he's a rapist bastard, like, remove him from office. But, like, how come, like, Trump was dogged for that shit for years, right? And it didn't matter, right? And the actors who are savvy enough and willing enough, the same with Ted Cruz. I talked about him in the other thing. He's just inability to sort of own something, because you don't have to, because they just keep saying both things at the same time, and then it's unfortunate, and it's really kind of fucking depressing, to be honest.
Yeah, there's so much in this book about how facts are irrelevant, and I mean, that's kind of the world that we're swimming around in right now.
Yeah, and the inability to sort of...
Can we talk about the appendix a little bit and what that adds to the story and our understanding of it?
Yeah, one quick thought to add on to Briggs' thought before we go to that. So the Ted Cruz example is really good, but another example I thought of recently from a non-right-wing point of view was the discussion of the stimulus checks, right? And how it switched from $2,000 to $1,400, right? And the discussion from the Biden administration was like, oh, well, actually, we said $2,000, we meant the $600 from the past plus a new $1,400. And I was like, that's double speak right there. Like, it's not
exclusive to one part. Yeah, and it's unfortunate because they allowed that to become that,
yeah, totally.
Right? Where, like, all you needed to say was, like, look, we tried 2,000. This shit's hard as fuck to pass. We're doing 1,400. It adds to 2,000. Like, we're sorry, but hey, here's some money. And then, that's it, right? You just face things. And instead, they're like, blah, 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 and they tried to pull the other thing. And it probably worked. I don't think
right. The
majority of people care.
No, I don't. I think you're right about that. But it does. It was one of those things where.
But you're right. Yeah.
It rankles and you're like, oh, this deception does happen like all the time.
Yeah. You could have done better.
Okay. Yeah. The appendix. I didn't read it. so Dave tells about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's in theory, a guide to newspeak, but I think part of what it's meant to do is to indicate that they get out of it, that they somehow overthrow this situation.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's something about, I mean, just the tone of it talks about newspeak in the past and the party's plans for it and the shit that was supposed to happen that, you know, implicitly, because this appendix or this, yeah, appendix exists, then, you know, these things didn't happen.
Oh, interesting. Like a metafictional escape clause.
Yeah, here's the last line. It was chiefly in order to allow time for the preliminary work of translation that the final adoption of Newspeak had been fixed for so late a date as 2050.
Huh. Interesting.
And I don't know, man. I wonder if that upsets a little bit the weight of the ending.
Do we know if this was in the original edition?
I do not know.
Yes, yeah. It was.
It was, okay.
Yeah.
It was?
Yeah, I believe it's part of the book. Yeah,
that's interesting because my book, my ebook, like tells me I'm done as soon as I hit the appendix. So it's like, all right, the book's over, and now this appendix is separate. But that would be that. It does make sense.
I'm pretty sure it's just part of the book.
I mean, it does make sense because it is, written like was the official language of Oceania. It's not like I, George Orwell, came up with Newspeak to serve this purpose.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like still in fiction.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
But it'd be interesting to know if it was written by Orwell or if it was written by an editor or like a publisher afterwards, like an additional thing, and if that was against his purposes.
I mean, I'm not basing this on any facts, but I'm pretty sure it's. I've always thought it was part of.
Yeah, there's no name on it that he
wrote.
That's interesting. Maybe we can look into this and do a follow up.
Yeah, I do think that the as grim as the ending is, it's not super grim. Like it's grim for Winston, but if it takes that much effort to subdue someone as kind of weak as Winston, you know. Like there's no system can do that.
Yeah.
Right. So I think it's like Winston didn't succeed, but there's a serious flaw in the system. If it takes that much, it takes months and years and O'Brien's energy and whatever else to turn Winston around. Because they did. I don't know. I still don't get why they didn't just vaporize him. I mean, I get it.
Yeah. But, I didn't get that either. Because he said that they always vaporize people. Nobody ever comes back.
But it seems like they always do, right? They reprogram and send them somewhere else or whatever. But the amount of effort it would take to do that to everybody?
Yeah. O'Brien says a couple times, like, Winston's a special case, right?
But why?
Yeah, he seems like such a little...
These things are so hard because, like, you literally can't trust anything O'Brien says. So it could... There's no way of knowing what in the book is true and what is not. Or at least, you know, within the fiction. The question is, does the system work or, you know...
Or does the system work for a long time? Or, like...
Mm-hmm. Obviously Winston didn't have a great outcome, and neither did Julia. But is this a system that's functional, or is this part of a cycle that's eventually going to collapse? Like maybe the appendix implies that it does.
Interesting,
right?
Nico?
I mean, I think that's kind of why it feels to me like it's kind of a middle part, like a middle evolution of the dystopia nightmare, because it is so difficult to do that, you know, like to have that be your system where you're, I mean, and there have been, you know, examples of it in totalitarian regimes, but like the harsher the system is, the more motivation there is for revolution. So it seems like, it just seems to me like I'm more scared of a system where you don't, like, there's a debate whether it's even a system of controlling people or not.
Right.
If that makes sense, because as opposed to here where it's like, I mean, it would also be interesting, I guess, to see the point of view of the proles who seem to be like not aware of any of this stuff, or maybe completely aware. Like, I could see either one. It's like the party just doesn't care whether they believe or not.
They're the ones with the actual freedom
here. Yeah.
I think that our reading of that is influenced by the fact that it's coming from Winston, right? If we weren't hearing Winston's point of view on this, then we might, if it was the washerwoman's story, maybe a different angle on that system. Also, I love that bit about how she has, like, he, like, likes a big ass. Like, he's like, all of a sudden, she was beautiful, and Julia's like, her ass is a meter wide. He's like, yeah, I'm into it. That was really good. So, ending-wise, like, I don't see a lot of hope here, I guess. And partly because the second-to-last paragraph, to me, this time was even darker. Like, the last line is brutal for sure, but that second-to-last paragraph, the voice from the telescreen was still pouring forth its tale of prisoners and booty and slaughter, but the shouting outside had died down a little. The waiters were turning back to their work. One of them approached with a gin bottle. Winston, sitting in his blissful dream, paid no attention as his glasses filled up. He was not running or cheering any longer. He was back in the Ministry of Love with everything forgiven, his soul white as snow. He was in the public dock, confessing everything, implicating everybody. He was walking down the white-tiled corridor with a feeling of walking in sunlight and an armed guard at his back. The long-hoped-for bullet was entering his brain. Like, that last line, I was like, fuck, like, that's the last line. Like, that's, even though the next paragraph is also really good, I was like, that paragraph was chilling. Like, the idea of this, like, happy retreat into the worst time of your life, willingness and eagerness to go back to when you betrayed everyone and, like, were dreaming of death and being like, yeah, great, this is wonderful, this is what I want, I'm happy here. Fucking sinister in, like, a really good way. But then C.S. Lewis did not agree in his review, as this was, like, odious but not, like, effective, whatever. And I was like, yeah, it is odious, fucking, it's horrible, you feel awful reading it.
Question before we, I mean, we also have to talk about canon or canon. I'm wondering if you, what do you guys think, which yak baby would be vaporized first, and why is it Nico?
I feel like it's all together, like, all four of us just, like, in a group, just, like, one bullet through
at the same time,
four heads. Yeah, totally,
we could reform as a mega yak.
I did note that this is a novel about a writer we famously hate. Like, at some point Winston talks about his job, and I was like, oh yeah, novel about a writer.
You're not really a writer.
He grabs his job that way. He's like, he works with words and tries to craft sort of new stories.
Yeah, but I mean, he's an editor at best, and what he really is just
censor.
A one key on a typewriter.
But he creates the character of Ogilvy, the heroic comrade.
That's true. Yeah,
I feel like I would be instantly vaporized, but just for, I would just, like, fall down a well accidentally, probably. Like, I think it would self vaporize.
Accidentally fall down a well?
Yeah. Maybe on purpose. Hard to tell. Okay, I've been sitting next to this cannon for almost an hour now, and I desperately want to do something with it. So I could either put a cannonball in here and shoot it into the sea at Poseidon just to fuck with him, or I could put 1984 in this cannon and shoot that into the sea to feed Poseidon. What should I do? What are your votes? Canon or canon? You have to say something. You have to say something.
I love this book, but I'm shooting
it. Whoa! Explain yourself.
I feel like what this book, a lot of the value of this book was a warning for something that's come and gone. And I don't mean the book should be eradicated. I mean more in the, like, do I need high schoolers reading this
book?
Right,
we should specify. The canon just means we don't want to get rid of it. We just want to, like, should this be in, like, the Western canon of literature where it's like, you have to read this book?
Yeah, I think this is an important book that deserves to be on those lists, and it deserves study. But I think increasingly as time goes on, it is part of studying the post-war. And it's become something else in contemporary culture, but what it's become is not actually in this book. And I think a lot of it, I don't think it has the same value, not to say it's less valuable now, but I don't think it has the same value now that it did in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and even 90s. I think now it's much more like looking back and being like, well, it didn't play out the same way, but the signpost, this thing we're pointing to, like, they came. We took a different road, and we're kind of already in an alternate reality version of this, right? So, and he was when he wrote it, and I guess that's part of it, is it goes through these cycles. But I don't think it will mean to children and teens now what it would have really before the year 2000.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Nico, what's your vote?
Yeah, I'm going to say fired out of a cannon too, because I guess just what I was saying before. I think it's worth kind of knowing and it's worth remembering, but I think there's probably more relevant, you know, dystopian fiction warnings that are more kind of relevant to, especially like modern America, like where the danger is not that you're going to be picked up by secret police and tortured to death. You know, there's more insidious kind of dangers, I guess.
Right. Dave.
I guess I'm willing to go along with that if we can come up with a book that should replace it. And
Aaron's dumbfounded. Look at his face.
I read it. So let's say this. I would load it into the cannon, but not fire until I was sure that we could come up with something more that is more relevant.
Oof. We're today, also going to need to come up with a tiebreaker in these situations.
Do you have an angle on that, Dave? Like, what do you think? Do you have an idea of what could replace this, or what could sort of be a satisfying alternative?
Not at all. Because I haven't read. I mean, it sounds like Nico has some options, and maybe Brick. I don't know. I don't feel like I've read anything that serves that purpose. But if that thing does exist, then
I would say that
I could get on board with that
in Orwellian fashion. That maybe it's not a book. It's TV show. I would say Black Mirror is the new.
Well,
1984.
Yeah, it's interesting.
There's a book called Feed by M.T. Anderson that I liked quite a bit. Now it's a TV show. I haven't seen the show. It's on Amazon, so I don't know if the show's any good. But it is a good sort of techno-future dystopia warning book. I don't think it's of the same quality as 1984, but if I'm looking for things to have teens read to really start having these kind of internal conversations with themselves, I look more to something.
I really like and hated the experience of reading this book, and I want to read it again, but mostly I wish that I had been made to read it in high school.
I'll throw another thing that's probably going to piss Aaron off. I like this book better than Brave New World, but Brave New World I would be less willing to shoot in the can.
Interesting. Yeah, I want to go back to Brave New World after reading this again as an adult and as a more discerning reader. I read Brave New World in high school too, so I was a little bit older, but still not probably that smart. Definitely not that smart. I'm still not that smart. What I'm talking about. But just like a slightly more sophisticated reader now than I was then, for sure. So I'd like to go back to reread it and see how it holds up to 1984 here. I can see that. I think I might agree with that. This stays in the canon for me. I can't believe all of you. This has to be taught. This is such an essential, important book. I don't know what all you're talking about. I do think I would agree to... I think this book is probably not as well served in a high school English class as it would be in a high school history class, or a college history class for that matter. I think that it probably has more to say about our thoughts on contemporary and past society than it does as far as like literary merit.
Yeah.
But that said, I kind of want to take that back already. Like, I do think it's well written. I do think there's lots of like literary audacity here. There's things that I'm really impressed by. Compared to Lord of the Flies, I was more in love with the writing of that novel than I was with this one, the like sentence level, like the prose style. But this is a remarkable, like, I can't believe you're all gonna put it in the can. I can't believe we're gonna put this in the can and throw it and shoot to Poseidon.
I'm gonna shoot something in the ocean eventually.
I kind of already want to edit myself a little bit, because what I'm saying is, if there's a better book to accomplish what this one accomplishes, that we should replace it with that. But there doesn't have to be only one book of its type in the canon, so
right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it sounds like Dave's argument is we should leave it in the canon and then come back to this canon.
There's an obvious solution here.
Oh shit, ask a yak.
Which is, no, it both goes in the canon and doesn't go in the canon.
Goes in both canons.
Canon is canon. No.
Uh-huh.
That was good. I like that a lot. That's a perfect ending. Damn, I can't believe that's wild. This is totally wild, listeners. Register your shock and alarm or your agreement on Twitter at YakBabies, or email us at YakBabiesPodcast@gmail.com and react to this bombshell discussion and sort of consequences for 1984. What did you think? When did you read it? What was it like when you read it as a child or as an adult? Or have you never read it? Are you going to read it now? Let's hear your thoughts. Also, you can find us on patreon.com/shackbabies for access to our secret podcast. For $1 a month, you can get access there. And there's tons of fun stuff happening there. There's bonuses. There's a whole new spinoff podcast called Snack Babies, which is all about snacks. So you can check that out. Entire episodes about snacks in the Snack Babies format. Broadcast from an alternate dimension. Also, there's drafts, there's Brother Bros, there's fun games with the Emmy machine, all kinds of fun stuff in there. And then, of course, our merch is online too. You can find that through our Twitter account somewhere. We'll eventually have a tiny URL, but it hasn't happened yet. It will happen sometime. For t-shirts, posters, mugs, all kinds of stuff there. It's all fun and worth your investigation. Until then, Yak Babies, yakking off.
The Yak Babies would like to thank all their loyal listeners, and especially their patrons, both past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, Sebastian, David, Roger, Kathleen, Bailey, Andrew, and William Howard Taft.